back to the TV Talk Machine. We talk about television every week. I'm Jason Snell, the co-host of this program. And across the internet for me, your host, your gracious host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi.
Ooh, gracious.
I'm not, I guess, sure you can be welcome. Accurate. You welcome us into your home, I guess, every week to talk about television.
That's true.
Something like that.
Hi, Jason.
How you doing?
I'm good. Good.
Yeah,
we're good. Bye. Every
we're
day.
Releasing.
Yeah.
You did a tweet blast just now about a new story that you posted. So maybe we should start there, which is
you've got
I love how you brought this out too, which is basically cable, like we said last week, cable news is not good. TV news isn't good. Don't watch it. It's bad. And then you say, but if you must watch TV news, this is what the TV news people ought to do, which is, you say, create an opposition, put themselves in opposition to Trump, because this is like you said, it's the full anti-Trump, because that's all that they've got left to do now. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, definitely. I think that that's, I think it's, well, first of all, a channel like this could have been slightly successful in the past. I think people were looking, I mean, there were little iterations of shows, whether it was Olbermann or Rachel Maddow, or little things like that were generating ratings. But there wasn't the catastrophic incident that happened on two Tuesdays ago in play. So as I write in this, I mean, I think that you're going to see certainly sometime, probably by the end of January, you're going to start seeing huge declines certainly for cable news, 24-hour news channels like CNN and MSNBC. You're going to see huge declines. They were all up because of the election. I definitely think that Fox is going to be still fine for a while. Although, as I said in this piece, I think that all signs indicate that there is, well, first of all, you don't know what to expect with the Trump presidency
sure.
or the people he's putting into his administration. And it's very likely that somewhere in the next 4 years, Fox is going to find itself in this really interesting position it's never been in before, which I also find interesting, but was not the whole gist of my story, in that they will basically be trumpeting a Republican presidency, but underneath Republican lawmakers and will be and politicians will be at odds with Trump, and they will be coming on the network to, as they always have, coming on the network to air their grievances. And you're going to see that if there is a fracture, even a small one, in the Republican Party, and they start to air their grievances, Fox is going to be in a really weird position, because they stay on brand like nobody's business. And so that will be very hard for them. But the gist of this piece is that the ratings are going to go down drastically, because the people who, I mean, we've talked about this last week as well. It's cable news failed people who were looking for information. This weird election year always spikes anyway, but this year in particular, with its weird carnival atmosphere, really drove ratings to highs. But I think people really have a sense that the CNN and MSNBC and all these couldn't do anything for them. There was actually no real journalism. And I think it's going to be driven back to the New York Times and whatever, that people are going to be looking for print journalism to help them out. So that audience is going to go away. Another audience is going to stay there until they realize that as they watch this whole, like, oh my God, what did he say today? What did he do today? You know, that fatigue will also, I mean, there's a little bit of it that will linger. Of course, people are going to be, people right now, if you can look on Twitter as well, they're so worked up about everything, every potential candidate, who's on the list to be this and that. And that's how it's going to be at the beginning of his presidency. But then there's going to be complete and utter fatigue, because it'll just be soul draining for people on the left and Democrats. It's just going to be really draining to look at that every day and like, now it's like, what did he do now? Less of an astonishment and then like bereavement. And then they will leave. And the available audience for a 24-hour news channel will be basically people who are not Republicans. So it's Democrats and independents who don't want to get off their couch and are not, whatever, for whatever reason, invested in looking at the New York Times or some other publication and reading these really in-depth analyses and getting into the crux of each issue. They just want to watch the news from their couch. That audience is going to still be there in a much smaller number, and it's not enough to sustain a network. So how, my point after that is, like, that group cannot sustain you, the people who are just turning you on out of, like, habit. So how do you do it? And I think if you tap into this anger, this anti-Trump anger, and you become Fox, but you become a much, much more aggressive beast than Fox News, because
Do you not think Fox News was aggressive during the Obama era? I mean, I think they were pretty aggressive.
I do. I think they were pretty aggressive. But I'm saying you have to go beyond that.
Oh my God!
Because
I don't know if that's possible. But
well,
okay.
For all of Fox News's faults, and I've watched them a lot over the years, for all of their faults, they still part of their shtick is to still pretend to be like a legitimate, fair and balanced news organization. Now, you and I may not believe that, and nobody really should believe that because it's just ridiculous. But that's kind of what they're sticking to. They're like, yeah, we're now, what's going to work more than that is basically an anti-Trump channel that makes no bones about it.
Interesting.
And then they're going to be, instead of just like fair and balanced news, don't have anybody from the right come on ever.
They're like the voice of the opposition at that point.
Yes. Yeah. And so what happens is you take that anger, and that anger can completely and absolutely be sustained for 4 years. Make no doubt about it, day in and day out. But if you actually become, if you rebrand yourself, not just as somebody who's like, look what he's done now and pissing and moaning about it, but like trying to be an advocate journalism site and trying to like rally everybody's anger, and then little bits where you can say, okay, here's we're going to direct you to this site to sign this petition, here, call this Senate, very aggressively on top of everything that he does wrong. And I'm sure there'll be tons of stuff. Look, he just lost a lawsuit today, so there's plenty of stuff that's going to happen in the next 4 years. You will get people, because as I say at the end of this piece, even if the people don't think that they would want that, once you give it to them, they're going to say, oh, I love this, because there's going to be so much anger and so much joy in his mistakes. But then there's also going to be this thing like, okay, let's go after them with this activist journalism. Now, I believe that actually is not really journalism, but whoever does this anti-Trump channel can dress it up that way, as I say, to make them sleep better. But I think a channel like that totally makes better business sense. And if somebody doesn't do it, they are crazy.
So is this not, it's not to the extreme that you're describing, but this was MSNBC strategy during the Bush administration, when you had Countdown with Keith Olbermann and all of that. And that, you know, and today they've got Rachel Maddow. I mean, it's not like they don't have some voices here that could do that. That was their strategy. I will say that one of the problems with a strategy like this is, like NBC is a good example. They're owned by Comcast. Comcast really wants to have a good relationship with, like, the FCC, among other things. They're a big conglomerate. So, I wonder if any big company is going to want to do it. And two, MSNBC didn't, you know, that strategy didn't pay off into, like, a massive success where they tried to be the liberal Fox News. It kind of didn't work.
Well, I think that the reason it didn't work is people were not pissed off enough. And then people still were pretending that they were going to get actually this kind of this balanced journalism. I think once everybody realizes now, I mean, that's the thing. Like the right doesn't even believe that anymore, that they're doing people who I'm talking about, people who watch the news. They just want to pare it back what their beliefs are. And for whatever reason on the left, people want to say, well, yeah, let's talk about it. Let's have an analysis of this. What's your side? And let's see this other side. That is not going to work anymore, because it did, because that solved nothing in this election. It didn't tell anybody what was coming. There was no, you know, it, basically cable news is just reading the headlines of what other people do. They don't have a whole lot of money to actually do investigative journalism or even international news, as we've learned from the last decade. So they sit and they do these roundtables and they just talk and talk and talk. You can turn that around now in the world that we're about to enter. I don't think there's ever been a situation where the country is absolutely this fractured and then this pissed off about it, and then also combined with the fact that they no longer even want to believe that they are getting something that's objective. They want subjective news, and then they want They want advocacy journalism. And I think that's, that'll work. But your idea that if it's a, if it's something like MSNBC, yeah, and you fear some kind of kickback, sure, that's a possibility. I also don't rule out that someone we don't even know yet could come and, you know, pull like a Vice. I think Vice is going to do its own thing, which is a different brand of this, but there's going to be room on the dial for somebody who would actually attempt to do this, because when the ratings go down, and they're going to go down so badly for the, for everybody else, it's not going to make that much. You can actually crack that. You can crack that audience super easy. So it's just sitting right there. I honestly believe that somebody will do it.
Hmm. Well, I guess we'll see. I want to back up one though and ask you about Fox again, because I think it's I think it's a really interesting question. I think the challenge for Fox is it's you have to play a different game when you are sort of the voice of the establishment than when you're the voice of the opposition. And Fox has made that, you know, they have made that pivot before during the Bush administration. They go to Obama and they become very much the voice of the opposition. So now, like you alluded to this earlier, this is going to be an interesting question for Fox. Is, does Fox stake out ground as the voice of Trump and his surrogates, or are they the voice of a if assuming that there are cracks between the kind of Republicans in Congress and the Trump administration, which I have to believe will happen because Trump seems to be not really a Republican, only sort of a Republican, and they're going to have disagreements and he's going to want to make his own stamp. But assuming that there are some cracks there, what does Fox do? Do they really want mommy and daddy to not argue anymore, or do they play it up, or do they take sides? Is Fox okay if all the arguments are whether they should do Republican A thing or Republican B thing because it's all good? Right. I'm curious to see how that plays out and whether they take sides or whether they just sort of let the mudslinging begin between like the internecine battles between sort of Republicans in Congress and the administration.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a media story to watch, because it's going to be rosy at the beginning, and then it's not going to be rosy because
right.
It's
well, and, yeah. And Rosie's boring. Honestly, like you said, Rosie's kind of boring, right? I feel like as much a business success as Fox News has been, and I've seen a lot of Fox News too, as so many people do when they visit their parents. When I go to my mom's, I see lots of Fox News.
Right.
And I never really liked Fox News even back in the beginning, because I just think I thought it was, it's actually much better production quality now. When it started, it was like local TV news. It was really bad. They're much slicker now than they ever used to be. But it's going to be a challenge, because it's one thing to tune in to hear about all the terrible things about what the guy in the office is doing because you didn't vote for him and you hate him. It's another thing when that's your guy, because it's just not as entertaining. It's just not as an imperative to watch if it's the guy you voted for doing stuff. Right. And if it's criticism of that, then that makes you feel kind of funny. And so I feel like that's the challenge with Fox News, is how do you maintain your ratings and your audience, especially if your audience might be a little fractured in terms of which side they're on.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's not going to happen right away, because if there's a, you know, they're still Schadenfreude and victory celebration.
Yeah, they're riding high right now, right?
It's a parade right now.
That's not the issue, but at some point, if everybody's riding high, at some point that's boring and that's bad for business if you're Fox News. So right. You have to, and there's only so much sort of ginning up of controversies about the party that's completely out of power that you're going to be able to do. It's going to end up being, something's going to happen. And it'll be interesting to see, because that's a new game they're playing, and they're not playing it with Roger Ailes anymore is the other part
right.
of that.
So, I know. So it'll be interesting. But that was
New World.
That was my thing for today.
That's good. All right. Well, so the people who are tired of us talking about politics and the election, mm-hmm. sorry about that. I will say we did get mostly positive feedback about last week's show. We did get one very angry email from Paul in the 907, who was mad that we were talking about the election. And even though I thought we were pretty fair about it and expressed some disappointment in how it went, but didn't like kind of go off on a rant about it. It was much more about sort of the coverage of it. I will say that Paul in the 907 sent an email a few hours later apologizing for sending an email in anger, and I appreciate that. So if he truly didn't subscribe and some didn't unsubscribe from our podcast and somehow got through the last 17 minutes, which seems unlikely, but if so, then thank you to Paul and the 907 for sticking with us. I wanted to talk to you about the other story that has your byline on it that was on the Hollywood Reporter this week, because we talked about it last week and I watched some of it last night, and it's and you were retweeting about it. It's Soundbreaking on PBS. What an amazing piece of work that show is. It is amazing. Yeah.
It really is. It was. I actually have rewatched the parts I've already seen. So I love it because you find new things. And I also found out that PBS was, of course, adding these little extras at the end, which I didn't have in my screener's copy link. They didn't have those little bonus extras at the end, and I was like, oh.
And it's all streaming, by the way. If you haven't seen it and you don't have PBS or you missed it or whatever, it's all on the PBS website. It's on their app. You can watch every episode, even the ones that haven't aired yet. I think are all up for streaming right now.
So, oh, that's fantastic. I didn't know that. So I will actually retweet.
Yeah, because I missed one and we just watched it on Apple TV last night and it was great.
Good.
We watched episode 3 about the human voice last night. And and it's just, you know, it is the breadth of it, the care that show takes in talking about different genres and making the connections between them. So it ends up not being like so many. It's so much easier to just end up with you know, a whole bunch of English rock guys from the 70s talking about what they did. And then you take a break and you come back and you talk to the pop stars from the 80s in the United States. And like they're all, and then the grunge artists, and you just kind of, and it's just, that doesn't happen in this show. It is all over the place. Everything is interconnected. There's a great moment when, oh, who is it? Is it Roger Daltrey? Somebody is talking about this black jazz singer from the like 40s, I want to say, and how great she is. And it links this all together, like all these vocalists in all these different genres across all this time. And they're all interconnected. It was really amazing. It's just such a great piece of work.
Yeah, they connect the dots super well. I said it in my review that I kind of like that they didn't do it. I mean, I think Ken Burns is one of the greatest filmmakers in the world, but they didn't really kind of go in that super granular level where they went decade by decade. They just, it all connects. And even in funny ways, like if you watched even the first one, because I watched it again, I didn't notice this the first time. But they have a clip of Joni Mitchell and she's singing California, and one of the lines is, "Then I go hang out with all the people all the friends I dig," and it's kind of like, oh, it's a '60s dig, because it's, you know, she's in the '60s dress, and it's an old time thing when she was on a TV show, so that the film of it looks a little funny, and then it goes from Joni Mitchell to Questlove. And talking about all this stuff, how it's linked, and he uses the word dig, and it was really kind of funny. It's like, just when you think that's a remnant of the '60s, there's another person using it. But also the movement from Joni Mitchell saying she doesn't need a producer, or basically had always never had in her contract said she didn't have to have a producer, and Questlove moving on and talking about others. It was just, the connections are amazing. Well, I love the actual editing in this series.
Oh God, yes.
Beautifully shot.
The video editing and the audio editing as well, where the music, I mean, it is a beautiful thing to listen to as it segues through different bits of music along with the voices. It's not jarring, and the way the visual editing is amazing too. It's just, it's a really great piece of work. The vocals episode talks about, you know, they I always like, you know, how technology affects culture, and that this show definitely does that. They talk about, you know, going from live performances to recorded performances, and how recorded performances are very different from live, and you can make recorded performances that are impossible to play live, and what does that mean? And they get to the vocals, and they start talking about like Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra, and how the ability to not shout down like a megaphone in order to record your voice, but have an amplified microphone that you could quietly croon to totally changed the emotional connection people had to some of these singers. And I never really thought about that before. And it's totally true. You can see how, you know, they could back off and they could, and they talk, they spent like several minutes talking about like Frank Sinatra's microphone technique. Like he was amazing at figuring out like to come in close and then to pull back. And just, I love that stuff. That changed how singing happened because they made microphones that were good. It's amazing.
Yeah, I think that when the things that you don't necessarily notice right up front while you're watching it, but then later if you rewatch it or you think about it more contextually, that they did is really amazing. And like one of my favorite parts of the first episode is George Martin's son talking about how, you know, he brings up each track of the four tracks that they used and of all these, the string arrangement and this orchestration on the Beatles song. And it was, you know, he's actually pressing the original, you know, the button so that you can actually hear the original recording and not the final version of it. And it's just, it's like, okay, that's right. And that whole thing about multi-track recording is, oh my God, I just let know Phil Spector wall of sound and how you created that was so fun. I mean, I love like when they, you were talking about how they did the sound and the visual editing in that one too. Cause I just rewatched that one last night. And it was so funny to see it. Where the guy who was one of the many, many, musicians who were playing for the wall of sound, he's like, they start listing off. He used three guitar players for this, and then you start seeing them pop up on the screen. Shots from in the studio of the actual musicians, and it's just it's thrilling. Love
yeah,
it.
Yeah. In the vocals episode, there's a whole bit about how like perfection is the enemy of emotional connection, and it's this whole little vignette where they're talking about Christina Aguilera singing Beautiful and how she like did it in one take, like laying down and felt like it was all a mess and spent the rest of the recording session for the album begging Linda Perry, the producer, to do another take on it, and she just said no, and then at the very end she says yes, and she gets a minute in and they just, she just shuts it off and she's like, nope, forget it, it's like you know, and then you hear her much later say, oh yeah, that was totally, I was completely obsessed with getting every note right, and I completely missed the imperfection that was part of the performance. It's just such a great, and they've got video of, you know, they've got some music videos, they've got photos and videos of that actually come from the recording sessions that you get to see. Just amazing. So the access, you get Sir George Martin on your side, and this was the last thing he was working on before he died. And a lot of doors open, turns out.
Yeah, shocker.
Amazing. They can get that footage. It turns out they can get that footage, and Eric Clapton will sit for an interview with you. And yeah, it goes on and on. So
yeah, that list of people is amazing. Yeah,
so check it out, people. And then there's that moment where the Imogen Heap pops up and she starts looping her voice and she ends up singing like eight different layers of her own voice over and over again. It's like, this is where we are today with this stuff. It's just, it's great. So Soundbreaking, BBS, check it out. You can get it
on it.
Yeah, it's so
I like that you just tipped us that we can watch it, you can stream it or whatever, in all the episodes.
Yeah, PBS don't care. Actually, we talk so much about like cable logins and stuff like that. And for PBS, all I had to do was say, hi, I'm a human being. I'd like to watch PBS. And they're like, all right, go watch some PBS. I'm like, okay, good. That's what I wanted.
Yeah, that's great.
All right. I have a couple, like, I like a mini topic.
Okay.
Maybe we can do. We talked about it before, but I got some feedback about this in the last couple of weeks from TVTM listeners, and so I wanted to mention it again, which is just this perception. I feel like the worm is turned now. Remember, it used to be TV seasons were all 22 weeks long,
right?
24 weeks long. That's what it was. That was what a TV show was, and we laughed not too long ago, like in the lifetime of the TV talk machine. We talked about in the last 10 years about the British model and five episodes here or nine episodes there or whatever. I feel like American TV audiences, at least the savvy ones who listen to podcasts like this one, hi everybody, you're really savvy, we love you, you're beautiful, and you're simultaneously worldwide released. So I think they're over the long seasons. I keep getting feedback now from these savvy TV viewers who seem repelled by the prospect of long seasons. Like, there was that note, I think we read it a couple weeks ago, about The Designated Survivor, where somebody wrote in and said, how many episodes is it this season? Is it 13? And I responded and I said, no, no, it's 22. And they said, oh, well, forget it then. Like, that was the clincher. It's like, not how they were enjoying it, but I think they felt like, well, I'm in for 13 hours of this, but there's no way I'm going to sit for 22. And I've heard more people say the same thing. There was a thread on I'm not sure whether it was TVTM or the Incomparable Facebook page, but it was somebody saying that the CW superhero shows, that they're all feeling kind of exhausting now because there are four of them and they're all going to do 22 episodes. And the question is, like, do they have 88 stories a year to tell about these superheroes? Mm-hmm. And I wonder what you think, because it feels to me, I'm starting to sense a trend now that maybe our tastes really have changed. They've been affected by cable and streaming, and that the network concept of jamming 22 hours down our throats is maybe kind of coming to an end.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, and it certainly jives with what you and I, that was one of our favorite topics. I mean, you have more choice, so you have more things you want to watch. So, like, you know, like, right. I can give this 6 episodes or 8 or 13, but then I got all this other stuff I want to watch. So, yeah, the thought of, I was having this the other day where I was kind of like, and I love Jane the Virgin, but I was like, it's a long season.
There's more. There's still more.
And it's just like, oh God, there's 22 episodes. There's a lot to get through. So I am already totally fatigued by it. So I think that others are certainly coming around to it because, like you said, it's just, look, the bad thing about that part, end of it, 22 and 24 episodes for some of these comedies, is that that's what doomed network to mediocrity in the first place, because every writer will tell you on these shows, we don't have 22 good hours. Every writer on every show will tell you that. We don't have 22 good hours. You know, so they're like, we're going to have some clunkers and people are going to need breaks. And the person who wrote this amazing episode or these two amazing episodes is just going to need a break. And they're not going to get back in until the 18th episode or whatever. And then what happens is also you do so people just, they want to go somewhere else. And so writing staffs turn over. So yeah, you just, the model has to change. I don't know when it's going to change, but it has to change. It's moving in that way.
I think you're right about the glut. I hadn't really thought about that, but that's totally part of it. It's not just that we're trained now to think 8, 10 episodes is fine, 12 episodes is fine, but it's the fact that there's always something else on the list. There's something coming right behind it. And you think to yourself, do I really want to, whether I'm binging or whether I'm just parceling them out by week by week, it's like, I got other stuff on my hard drive, right? I got other stuff on my to-do list for streaming. I don't want to commit to this much. There's too much else waiting here. If it was nothing but like Gilligan's Island reruns, then sure, bring it on. But it's not like that anymore. That's not the world we live in.
You've got Soundbreaking to watch.
Yeah, listen to. Mm-hmm. All of those things. Well, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. It'll be interesting to see if the networks finally really embrace like Short Run and say, you know what, we're going to have a bunch of shows for 13. But I don't know, the economics of that may not work for them.
Well, I think they definitely should. I'm already mystified at how CW makes money on its shows. And maybe it makes money on them because it has so many to sell on stock up around the world at other places.
That could be.
So it could be that 13 wouldn't work for them.
But I was surprised, like with Legends of Tomorrow. I'm surprised that some of these shows aren't short run. Like, we're going to do one set of superheroes in the fall and another one in the spring instead of just, we're going to make 22 episodes of this thing and good luck. And if you love it and it's your favorite show, then I guess that's great. But to your point, even then you can feel it sag when they are out of ideas.
Yeah, I mean, you can see it. Like, you can. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, even like on great shows, like, and I'm a huge fan of bottle episodes, but you know, you talk, and some bottle episodes are the best episodes of that season. But that's when the writer's like, yeah, we're kind of out of money, and I can. I love when you hear like stuff. I was doing a talk up in Vancouver, and it was with Simon Barry. Who did Continuum, And he had a great story where he was just like, yeah, like I knew that, like, he goes, I'm the guy who's working the budget here. He goes, like, I knew that if I directed it, we're going to save money. And I knew that the way I was going to direct it, I could manipulate my direction and like keep it compact. We're not going to blow a lot of money outside and do all this stuff. So when you hear those stories, it is kind of funny. Like, there's money, there's fatigue in it. There's a lot of things that go into play in trying to put 22 episodes out there.
Want to do some letters?
Let's do that.
All right. By the way, we do an episode every week without fail. So maybe there's too much of us, too. I don't know. We can just give us your feedback. Would you prefer a 12-episode season of the TV Talk Machine? Dean Travel Update. Dean from the 707. He went to Utah. He says, watch Big Love.
Okay. That's a good one.
Now to find a good bar. Good luck.
Now to find a good bar.
Jeff in the 512 wrote in to say that he thinks the best TV Xanax show is a show called 8 Out of 10 Cats Does Countdown, a wonderful British panel game show all on YouTube. I find this very funny because we turned on the TV in our hotel room in Dublin, Ireland the night before we flew home, mm-hmm. and 8 Out of 10 Cats Does Countdown was on the BBC. And it's like a satire, satirical TV show called 8 Out of 10 Cats. And they apparently took over Countdown. So it's the format of this more serious-ish kind of panel show, Countdown, except it's replaced by the comedy people who are completely ridiculous. And we watched it and we were laughing and also utterly baffled about why it was happening. And I had to look up on Wikipedia, like, what is this that we're seeing? And I was like, oh, it's a mashup of two different shows. But it is funny. So if you want to check out what Jeff's talking about, look on YouTube for 8 Out of 10 Cats Does Countdown.
I'm going to look at it for sure.
The concept of 8 Out of 10 Cats is that there's apparently an ad that says 8 out of 10 cats prefer Friskies or something like that. And I think that they did a whole riff on like, how do you survey the cats? Like, what are the cats? What survey do you, the pollsters go and ask the cats what they prefer? And it just kind of goes from there. Anyway, thank you, Jeff, and the 512. Michelle wrote in. I'm not sure she gave us an area code. This was on Twitter. She said, great insights on the election and the media. See, some people like that. Looking for the next Norman Lear. I think that a lot of people are talking about, like, what will the reaction of creative people to the election be in terms of, you know, it's usually, you know, like I was saying about Fox News, sort of the most interesting stuff happens when you're in opposition to what's going on and not when you're riding high.
Oh, exactly. And that, by the way, that column, I'll be doing that column next week.
All right. Good. Solid. Okay. We got a few more. Alan in the 660. This is Alan. He is one of my nemeses from Facebook. He says, Jason.
Hello, Alan.
Oh, hello, Alan. One of my nemeses named Alan or Alan. From this is 660. For the second week in a row, Jason, I'm afraid I'm not going to be a good nemesis to you. I want to offer kudos for what you said about Nate Silver's prognostications. I say this despite the fact that all year I thought Nate was being too bullish on Trump, but I was wrong, and he deserves credit. I'm a cord cutter. I was feeling somewhat bummed not to have TV on election night, but if they were seriously covering it, as you guys said, alternating meaningless recitations of early returns with campaign surrogates dishing up pablum, I obviously didn't miss anything. Nope, you did not.
No, you did not.
All right. Amanda from the 616 wrote in to say, thanks for agreeing with my thoughts that TV news is garbage. Reading online seems to suit me much better. Is it area codes you're listing? I'm new to the show. If so, I'm from the 616. Very nice. Thank you, Amanda.
You got it, Amanda.
That's right. Got it in one.
But do we know where the 616 is?
616 area code. Well, I would need to use the Google for that, Tim.
Oh, there is a Google advice. I might have to use that too.
And the answer is Michigan. Michigan.
Okay, Michigan. All right.
Here's a good one. This is Tanya in the +27.
Ooh.
I looked that up.
Did you?
South Africa.
Oh, see, we are worldwide getting it done.
We're released simultaneously in South Africa. That happens.
Uh-huh.
It's not Friday when it gets released there, I think. It may already be Saturday morning. But
we have to be worldwide in South Africa because let's not forget, for, 3 years, I was the golf writer for South African Sports Illustrated.
Interesting.
True fact.
Tanya says, don't really have much to say this time. I'm a recent listener to your podcast, and you both pointed me to some really great TV and steered me clear of some potential doozies Pure Genius brings to mind. I just wanted to say hi and add my area code to your list, Tanya and the Plus 27. So just checking in.
Thank you, Tanya.
Mm-hmm. It's very nice. Hey, did you know that Colin Murray is back on Fighting Talk on the BBC?
No, I did not.
He returned. He resigned from his old job, which was he was employed by a radio station, I think, that was owned by a right-wing newspaper in the UK. And they disgusted him, so he resigned. And he got his old job back, basically, at the BBC doing Fighting Talk. I discovered that show because of you, because he interviewed you many years ago for his podcasting documentary. Uh-huh. But he's back talking about soccer. Maybe one day. You can talk about soccer at 2 a.m.
Yeah. Remember that? He was trying to get us. I would have had to drive into San Francisco and get into the little pod at 4 a.m. I was like, oh, dude.
On a Saturday morning.
On a Saturday morning. I was like, you don't have any idea what my sleep schedule is like.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
Here is Will in the 919. I'm assuming it's Giants great Will Clark. I'm sure that's it. I'm sure that's who it is. Giants great Will Clark. 919 North Carolina. I don't know what Will Clark's doing in North Carolina, but he says, I decided to take Tim's advice about disengaging from social media too late, and it is a sound strategy. I would not be surprised by this is what we're talking about, by entertainment bringing more dystopian stories and atmosphere, thinking how the decline of 70s New York played out on the big screen, visions of Sidney Lumet and Scorsese seem to define that era even today. Are there shows you think are particularly definitional, or do you think the abrupt change in cultural perceptions will lead to some new directions? What do you think? You know, there's going to be some interesting artistic reactions to the election. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I think the first we're going to see the first reaction in music. That'll be instantaneous. So we'll start. The music's going to get a lot better, or a lot different and better in different ways. I'm guessing if you liked anthemic punk stuff and political stuff and do the Russians love their children too and all that stuff. So you're going to get more of that, I think. But it'll be self-focused. It'll be looking interior. I think that we're going to, it's this time next year, basically, or maybe a little bit less. I'm wondering if right now there should be people working on shows. But again, I might be jumping the gun here, and I'm going to write this column next week for THR, because it could be that people are like, you know what? That's risky. I don't want to do that, because am I going to alienate 50% of the audience? So I'm just going to make something that's escapist and that's my political statement. I made something where you just want to visual Xanax yourself out rather than somebody taking on a West Wing type show. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where it goes. I might have more fully rounded out theories next week.
And always good to forward promote next week.
Yeah.
Tune in. This is Peter, previously the 414, now of the Plus 52.
Ooh, 414 was Atlanta, I believe.
And now Mexico.
Ah, okay.
So
he made it out.
Peter's about to reference something, which is that I said that the sound breaking was right up your alley, because a PBS documentary about music is one of the things that would be perfect for you. And I joked at the time that for all I know, your other, number one right up your alley would be a show about farts. So so Peter wrote in to say, I just want to point out Soundbreaking is a great title for both a show about music and a show about farts. You got me, Peter. You got me.
Wow. Well, people are paying attention. That is the key element.
Oh, Soundbreaking. Wow. Soundbreaking 2 is about the history of flatulation. flatulence. Yep. I recently made the move from U.S. to Mexico, so I've been enjoying the Mexican Netflix, which has way more content than its U.S. version. I have noticed they also distribute a lot of shows here. They're distributing Designated Survivor, but doing it in weekly installments, much like Hulu. They're only on the second episode, so they're behind the U.S., but I'm wondering if this would be because of the agreement they have, or maybe they're testing to see how people like getting shows weekly. I mean, Designated Survivor is a weekly network show. They can't distribute it ahead of ABC, basically.
Right.
And in fact, those shows tend to be delivered weekly by the producers. Mm-hmm. So they the other shows don't exist
right.
to be. They're making them as fast as they can.
There is no backstock. Yeah.
But thanks, Peter. This is we keep hearing from people all over the world who have sort of like different windows into television because of how Netflix is distributing stuff in their country. And also, it seems like a wider window into American, like current American TV, because a lot of the American shows seem to be getting picked up by Netflix for international distribution. So we're inflicting more of our culture on the world immediately. So sorry about that, world.
Sorry, world.
All right, this is a good one. This is Anne straddling the 314 and the 618. We've heard from Anne before. She's our unofficial TV medical fact checker. Yes. And she wrote in saying, as a nurse, I love finding a medical nod of things on TV and enjoyed listening to you gentlemen discuss pure genius. I will not be watching with you because it would likely cause my head to explode. But I do want to relieve some of your anxiety relating to ingesting magnets. One magnet would easily pass through the digestive system without trouble. The issue comes when two strong magnets are swallowed and they adhere to each other. I don't even like to think about this in the intestine, causing twisting and obstruction. So ingesting a magnet-powered object to diagnose a problem is not a thing yet, but it wouldn't likely kill you in theory. I like the in theory.
In theory, right.
We can swallow small encapsulated cameras to observe the digestive tract, so who knows? It could one day be a thing. Please do not take this as support for the ridiculous non-medicine that is pure genius. Sincerely, Anne. Thank you, Anne.
Well, and there was just, I mean, you didn't watch it, but they did say that they had magnet stabilizers, plural, in there so that they could steer it around. So, yeah, that person's dead.
I think that it just, like, zipped right through all the different parts and out.
So she's in St. Louis, Missouri, bordered, and then across the Mississippi River is Illinois.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Right on the river.
Yeah, some one of those two she's in. Okay.
Maybe lives in one, works in the other. Could be. Okay, we have one more. It's from Bradley from the +44. Our old pal.
We know where
Bradley.
That is.
We do.
Brits.
We do. Jolly old.
We don't have any more Brexit jokes.
Blighty. No, we are not. Who's laughing now, Brexit?
Who's laughing now?
We're approaching the end of the year, and of course, end of year lists. Tim's mention of his now typical 50-plus show long list got me thinking about it in comparison to my own. Currently, I have 12 shows that I want on my top 10, and Rectify and Black Mirror still need to be watched before I make it, and it's making me wonder whether I'm watching enough TV or even the right TV. I've constantly been in agreement that there's too much TV and too much good TV, but now I'm left questioning all that I know to be true. Keep up the great work, Bradley from the +44. Well, I mean, the fact is, even you, a TV critic professionally, can't watch everything.
Nope.
So
I can't.
I mean, that's just this is the thing, is that there's almost nobody alive who can actually claim to be able to assemble a top 10 list of TV shows, knowing that they've seen everything and these are the 10 best, because you can't see everything at this point. Instead, what happens is, if you're lucky, you've got you and Dan, your colleague, and you guys can compare notes a little bit and make your own list and hope that with those lists together, you've covered everything or almost everything, because you still do some freelance reviews too when you guys can't cover it. So, I mean, I think Bradley shouldn't feel so bad. It's like, there's too much TV for one human being to understand at this point.
Yeah, it's impossible.
It's like stars in the galaxy. You can't.
That's why I'm much more quick to jump off of a show now, you know, and sometimes shows need patience. Like we talked, 2 weeks ago about Good Behavior with Michelle Dockery,
right,
from Lady Mary, and about that show. And I watched the first three and it only made it. The third was not very good. But I still kind of wanted to see it, but it's hard to say, am I going to stick with something like that when there are so many other choices? So it is really hard. But like, if there's something like The Affair, which I always hated, I'm just like, I'm not going to watch that. It's coming back, by the way, on Sunday for its third season. Forget it. So yeah, I'm a little more quick on the trigger.
That's the way to do it. That's the only way to live, in these times of confusion, is by having a quick trigger finger and just ditch it if it doesn't immediately appeal to you. Because you know what? If it doesn't immediately appeal and then you kind of hear about it through the grapevine, you can revisit it then.
Yeah.
But if it's not working for you, don't, you know, try something else. You will find something that hits the spot right, you know, right away. And that's
absolutely
the stuff you should be watching, is the stuff that gets you right out of the gate.
Well, I was trying to tell the students in my class this thing. this concept of like never, ever. I mean, unless you choose to, because a lot of people do like kind of mindless crap to take their, you know, they don't want to work their sure. mind after a hard day at work. So
Xanax.
Yeah. And guilty pleasures are guilty pleasures. It's mm-hmm. great. But I was like, you know what? We live in a world where you never actually have to watch a series that's not quote unquote great. So
it's true.
That's the world we live in now. Yeah. I could curate that and keep them busy for years.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely true. I was thinking about this, that maybe I even mentioned that on the podcast before. I feel like in the days when you would sit down and watch, and I don't have this anymore, but sit down and watch 3 hours, you know, 8 to 11 PM of prime time, like we could program 3 hours a night for every night for the entire year and never run out of good stuff. Like
no.
you could make a network grid, even if they were only 10 episodes or 13 episodes. So you had to sub in another show when that show was done. Like you could do it. You could literally fill primetime every night of the entire year with good stuff just for people to watch.
Oh, absolutely.
Easily.
Zero question about that. Mm-hmm.
You may be able to fill every hour, every waking hour.
Every hour of the, it feels like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's the world has changed. It's a good thing. Good TV is good. It's good to have good TV. It's real
yeah,
good.
Yeah, it is.
All right. I'm going to do the numbers unless you Columbo me. What do you think?
Nope.
Okay.
Not going to Columbo you.
Nope. No Columbo. Got it. Here's how you reach us. You can tweet at us. TVTM is the podcast Twitter. I'm Jason L. Tim is Bastard Machine. You can visit our Facebook page along with Alan and Alan, my nemesis, facebook.com/TV Talk Machine. And you can email us podcast@TVTalkMachine.com. If you're angry at us, count to 10 before you send the email. We love you. And, you know, if you don't want to hear us talk about the political stuff, it probably won't happen very much longer, but you can just skip over that part. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
We forgive you. All right, Tim, that's it for another week. We'll be back. You know, next week is Thanksgiving week. I wonder what that means for us.
Who knows? Maybe we'll have so much L-tryptophan in us, we'll just sleep through it.
Yeah, I think that might be the case. So we might miss next week. It could happen. Because
as
I mean,
an advance, consider that an advance warning, listeners.
I think people are hearing now live, simultaneously released, that we're going to skip next week. But we'll be back the week after. With a new episode. So in 2 weeks, then we'll see you. Look
yes.
at that. We're making executive decisions right here as we go.
Done. Yeah, right. I like it.
All right, Tim, have a good weekend and have a good Thanksgiving.
You too. And we'll talk to you soon.
Bye, everybody.